This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24/7 home of the Black and Gold, SNR, Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. Matt, lots to talk about today, lots to get to, yeah. A lot of different things. The NBA had its draft lottery Tuesday night.
I'm not exactly sure how that goes, but okay.
I think it's the top 12 teams or something like that, or however.
The non-playoff teams
go into the lottery, and you get the number of ping pong balls, depending on where you finished at.
Yeah, yeah. If you were the best non-playoff team, you get one. If you're the worst,
goes,
you get 12 or whatever.
Right. Goes on down.
Okay.
So it really keeps you from tanking for a certain player.
Yeah, I mean, if LeBron's coming out, everyone knows it two years in advance, you could set yourself up to stink.
I think the Detroit Pistons had the second or third most ping pong balls in. They weren't the worst team.
Okay.
But they ended up winning the draft lottery last night.
Okay. I think the same thing happened for Sidney Crosby, actually.
Correct.
Now I think about it. Okay.
Got me to thinking, would you like to see the NFL go to a lottery system like that?
Maybe. I mean,
you wouldn't see the suck for luck anymore.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
That's interesting. I mean, you'd still, not guarantee, but if you're the worst team in the league, you're probably going to end up with an early pick.
I know in the NBA, the worst you can do if you have the worst record, I think, is 3 or 4.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't fall below that.
Because my son was actually explaining to me what's going on in hockey this year, because there's an expansion team coming up in Seattle or whatever. And he said they could get the first overall pick, but they can't get worse than 3.
Yeah, I think that's what the NBA does.
I'm paraphrasing. So that's interesting. Maybe, you know, as a marketing campaign, the NFL is so good at creating stories. I wouldn't do it the night of a playoff game like they did, though. I would make a whole hour
something
show
in, something
this
in the
time
off
of year.
Season, yeah.
You know, right, or some kind of boring time of the year, not this
time
of year.
Well, after the Super, you do it after the Super Bowl, you know, right after, maybe the next weekend after the Super Bowl,
right,
when there's nothing going on, the combine's upcoming. Okay, here's what the draft order is going to be. Now you know the combine.
No, I'm fine with it. And I think I would do it like that, that if the Texans go 0-17, they definitely get the most ping pong balls.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you want the best team or the worst teams to have the best shot to improve. I mean, that's how the whole thing's built. But yeah, I mean, it would be probably less tanking.
I think the problem that you would have in the NFL doing it is that there are more non-playoff teams than there are in those other leagues that do it that way.
Right. Maybe it's just the top 10.
Because you have 14 non-playoff teams, so 18 of your teams would then therefore get a ping pong ball.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if your 18th best,
the best
non-playoff team has one ball in there and it happens to get picked and they get the top overall pick?
I mean, think about the Steelers. What was it, 2 or 3 years in a row, they were the next one up. You know, they were just missed the playoffs by half a game the 1 year and whatnot. If they end up with the first overall pick, you know, in one of the last couple seasons and get Chase Young or a quarterback or, you know, I mean, and there's other examples. The Vikings were just missed team the 1 year. If they would have landed Trevor Lawrence,
a game changer. Yeah,
that's a game changer. Absolutely.
So maybe just the top 10 teams.
Maybe. Yeah, that wouldn't be bad, but then people might tank to not be 11. You know, like how the Eagles
perhaps,
pulled
but you're
Hurts.
Still probably
I mean, you're still
yeah.
guessing. You know,
yeah, you're still kind of trying to figure out where you're going to be at,
And it'd be one game at the end of the year. You know, like the Eagles pulled Jalen Hurts their last game, basically to lose.
The only other problem with that is, okay, let's go back to the Minka Fitzpatrick trade.
Mm-hmm.
Steelers trade a first-round pick
for
Minka Fitzpatrick the following year.
Be harder to deal your future first.
Well, what you see happen in the NBA in particular is that if that pick is a lottery pick, then you get the following year's pick or something like that.
Yeah,
there's always kind of
some
contingencies.
That would make some sense, you know, because, you know, especially if I'm the team receiving the pick, I want to look at the team I'm dealing with and be like, they're pretty bad. And I'm sending them a player, they're going to get better, you know.
Yeah.
maybe there'd be less movement of first round
picks.
There's
definitely some pluses
reason.
And minuses there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Trades, I think, are a minus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's interesting. I didn't plan on talking about hoops, but I've referenced Mike Lombardi a lot. And, you know, I read his book, and he grew up in this business with Al Davis and Belichick and
all the evil geniuses.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. But he knows a thing or two, and I listen to his podcast, and he's a Philly Atlantic City guy. So he grew up his whole life as a huge Sixers fan and Dr. J. And he was talking about the Sixers because they just got eliminated, you know, to a team that probably was lesser than them. Atlanta knocked them off shockingly. And he said a big problem with that team, and I wanted to just talk about this from a tanking perspective. In his opinion, and I don't watch much basketball, he does with that team in particular, they were built off a total tank. I mean,
well, yeah, yeah.
They just flat out told you, we're going to stink, trust the process, I think they said 100 times, and now they've got all these dudes. But his thoughts on the Sixers are there's no mental toughness. Losing was okay and even accepted and
yeah.
even promoted
right.
during a lot of these guys' time with the organization. They aren't particularly hard on the players. They're not in the best shape. You know, like, none of that foundation, in his opinion, I'm just repeating it, you know, because I don't know basketball,
well, I think I think in basketball, and this is kind of the thing with the Browns a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you have a very young roster. You end up having a very young roster because you don't
sure.
have – so what we saw Cleveland do, okay, they have a little bit of success a couple years ago. They're the hot team.
Right, right.
And it didn't work out. You know, they had too many young guys on that roster. So then mm-hmm. they go out last year and they had a bunch of veteran guys who were
More established.
A little more established. Right. So you're trying to establish that culture because you just don't have it because you mm-hmm. got rid of everybody. You know, you got rid of the Joe Haydens when that rebuilding.
Exactly. They didn't have to move on from Hayden and Mitchell Schwartz and
yeah.
some guys that
keep
went on
some
to
of those guys.
Long, good careers at tough positions to fill. And that reminds me, actually, the Jags, I don't think that I'm sure of it. The Jags didn't stink on purpose, but they went many years picking in the top five, the top 10, missed on a lot of those picks, and were really young, put together one good year where they came here and won in the postseason. But they didn't have a foundation either.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were all young dudes from a losing organization, and then this overpriced
free agents. They had some Calais Campbells and
yeah,
guys
some overpriced guys. And then I was thinking about Miami, too. Like, I think Miami's the latest true tank. You know, they were tanking for yeah. Tua. And they didn't end up with the first overall pick type of deal. But then they did bring a lot of New England culture type guys in.
And then they let them go.
But they were paid for them, the Van Noys and yeah. those type of guys. So
that leads me, you mentioned that Jaguars team.
Mm-hmm.
2016, they had the number 6 defense in the league.
Okay.
They were top 10 defense.
Oh, they were loaded. They played that Seattle cover 3.
Had a lot of those guys that were in place in 2017 when they actually went from being – they went from a team that went 3-13 to 10-6.
Okay.
The big ad for them that year was Leonard Fournette.
Was that his rookie year?
That was his rookie year. They
okay.
went from
like the fifth pick in the draft.
22nd in rushing in 2016 to number 1 in rushing in 2017.
Wow.
Their leading rusher in 2016 was T.J. Yeldon with 465 yards.
Wow.
Fournette,
one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, Fournette went over 1,000 that next season. So they went from 3-13 went from 22nd in rushing to first. That helped the defense as well because they were a good defense. They went to being a great defense. They were sixth. They had 1,030 plays run against them in 2016. They had 993 run against them the following season.
They just weren't on the field as much.
They weren't on the field as much, so they jumped up.
They were the team playing with the lead at the end of the game as opposed to just getting run on and run on. Right.
I sent you those numbers the other day because I wrote about this on DK Pittsburgh Sports. The improvement for teams over the teams that have taken a running back in the first round,
mm-hmm.
the last 10 times, have improved by an average of 2.3 wins per season.
That's a huge jump.
They go from 6.9 to 9.2.
In a 16-game schedule.
Yeah.
Right.
And that includes some teams that, like, Melvin Gordon, and I went all the way back to the 2015 draft. That was
okay.
10 That was 10 first-round
running backs. 10 first-round picks.
So, you know, the Chargers went from 9-7 to 4-12 when they drafted Melvin Gordon, even though, Brandon Oliver had been their leading rusher. Gordon came in and rushed for 641 yards the next season. I think he got hurt that
year. I'd say he was a lot better his second year.
Yeah, he got hurt that rookie year. But they went from 9-7 to 4-12. all the other teams on the list essentially got a little, at least a little bit better, and even the ones that didn't. For example, you look at
Mentioned Seattle even drafted Rashad Penny, the one because he
didn't really work out, but they discovered Chris Carson.
Yeah, there's a reason Penny didn't work out. Somebody else did.
Yeah, somebody else did. One of the other teams that saw a step back was the 2018 Patriots, who when they took Sony Michel, they had been 13-3.
I'd say they bet they were pretty good to start, though.
They went to the Super Bowl. That's the year they lost to the Eagles in a shootout. They were 10th in rushing that season at 13-3, with Deion Lewis leading the way with 896 yards. But defensively, they were 29th in the league that year.
Okay.
They had 1,022 plays run against them.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot.
The next year, they jumped to 21st because they went from 10th in rushing to 5th in rushing.
And Michel wasn't even great.
Yeah.
But he was an upgrade. And
he was an upgrade. He had 931 yards as a rookie. But in the Super Bowl, he had 18 carries for 94 yards and scored the game's only touchdown.
Yeah, I remember. Okay. Yeah, and he's a lot different than Deion Lewis.
Yeah.
I mean, Deion Lewis was not the close people out type of back either.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah. But they went from, they had been 13-3, they went to 11-5 the next season, but they won the Super Bowl.
But they won the Super Bowl,
yeah.
Right. And a 13-win team's probably not going to go up, by two and a half games either, right. Interesting.
But even like the Edwards-Hilaire pick last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Chiefs go from 12-4 to 14-2.
Yeah.
Their leading rusher in 2019 was Damian Williams with 498 yards. Edwards-Hilaire had 803 last year.
Yeah.
They improved from 23rd to 16th overall in rushing.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
The jump in defense wasn't great. They went from 17th to 16th, but they went from playing 1,043 plays to 1,022.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear, and this shouldn't shock anybody. I mean, last year aside, because of, we talk about this a lot, I mean, the rookie running backs took a while. Running backs should give your team a shot in the arm.
Absolutely.
I mean, a shot of adrenaline, a new guy there with, you know, first round talent. I mean, so you're probably getting, because, you know, we'll all concede running backs will fall a little bit. I mean, if you're taking a running back at the end of the first round, he's probably the 15th best player in the draft or so, you know.
Especially now.
Especially nowadays, right, those last few years. You know, Michel doesn't really fit that mold, but that they thought so. And he's young, and he's got fresh legs as opposed to someone that's been beat up for a while. Goes into a good team, presumably, you know, because not many of them are going in the top 10. You know, usually you're going to go to a better team like the Chiefs or Seattle or, you know. And it gives you a shot in the arm to win now. And that adds up.
Yeah, I think when you look at it.
Now, that doesn't mean the Steelers are going to go 17-0.
No.
They'll probably lose more than they did
last year. But the average improvement in rushing ranking with those first-round backs. And the first-round backs were Edwards-Helaire, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Rashad Penny, who obviously hasn't worked out, Sony Michel, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon.
Okay.
So there's some hits and there's some
misses. Yeah, they're not all superstars,
but
there's some great ones.
So the average ranking, rushing ranking, went from 18.8 on average to 9.9.
Wow. That's massive.
That's a huge improvement. They averaged over.
If the Steelers could get to 20.
Yeah. Again, that's a massive improvement.
Yeah, and that's not asking that much.
The average plays run against them for each one of those defenses.
Mm-hmm.
With those rookie running backs on board, they average about 24 fewer plays over the course of the season.
It's a lot.
That's almost half a game's worth of plays.
And that's an awful lot, right.
So, wow. You know, I think you look at the rookie running backs and you say, well, how can this help the Steelers win now? Well, that's, you know, it's going to make your defense better because they're going to play fewer snaps.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden now maybe, you know, T.J. Watt, instead of tapping out for a couple, you know, plays here and there in the third quarter to save himself for the fourth quarter, says, oh, we only played 20 snaps in the first half.
Oh, yeah.
Because we dominated the time of possession, so
right.
I don't need to tap out as much.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I mean, I sent you some snaps per game stuff, actually, recently. It's one of my dorky spreadsheet stuff. And it doesn't sound like much, but the discrepancy of a couple snaps per game over the course of a year is big.
Especially now that you're playing 17 games.
And you're playing 17 games, right. And it's not like a hockey player skating up and back the ice one extra time, or a basketball player, you know, having to go the length of the court and turn around and do it again. I mean, one football play is hard. Yeah. You know, on everyone out there, maybe the free safety gets a couple plays off, or a running back or a wide receiver half-ass is a route on a run play.
Right. But
majority of the human beings on the field for one snap,
especially the guys in the trenches people ask, why is T.J. Watt tap out so much? He's 250 pounds playing against guys who are 300 pounds, often two of them. He's often getting double teamed there.
And there's times he gives up 100 pounds to the guy blocking him.
Yeah.
You know, right. That wears on you.
Yeah. And then you get, cut the full speed once you get around that guy.
Like, mm-hmm. And you want to play your best. You don't want to be dragging and, you know, depending on the situation and things.
So here's my question to you, Matt. Let's go through that group again. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, mm-hmm. Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Rashad Penny, Sony Michel, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon. You're ranking Najee Harris, as a rookie, where do you put? Because I think somebody said I was cheating on this because I used Fournette and Elliott because they were top 10 picks. I'm like, well, Fournette shouldn't have been a top 10 pick,
and probably wouldn't be if he came out next draft.
Yeah, if he came out now,
team would have considered him a top 10 pick.
If I'm picking between Fournette and Harris, I'm taking Harris because I get the same power back, but I get one that catches the football.
Yeah. Fournette's faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Fournette was a pretty good prospect.
Oh, absolutely.
He has had a wonderful career.
Catch the football.
Right. He's not going to be much of a receiver.
Yeah.
And he was a dump off guy. Even there was one year he caught like 50
passes. So for me, of that group, I'm taking Barkley. I'm taking.
Now or when they came out of school?
When they came out of school.
Barkley's number one.
I think Elliott's number two.
Yeah.
And then McCaffrey.
It's easy to say McCaffrey, but I like him better now than I did then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was a smaller guy. He wasn't a great between the tackles
player.
And
maybe I think I would go Barkley, Elliott, Gurley, McCaffrey, and then Harris.
Yeah, Gurley's high.
Yeah, Gurley was an absolute stud.
He was a stud. He was a thoroughbred, had it all. Actually had knee problems still in Georgia. The other end's easy. Like, we were doing this long enough that when Penny came out, we didn't think Penny was a first-round pick, period.
No,
nobody thought he was, and that's proven to be true. He's last. I didn't think Michelle was a first-round pick, but I liked him a lot more then than now because he caught the ball and looked like a receiving back at Georgia a little bit because Chubb was the hammer.
Yeah.
He doesn't catch anything. I mean, he's a zero in
the
passing.
Not even try to throw.
He's the worst one of the whole group.
Yeah.
And I think he's about shot, too. So he would be second to last. I would take Harris over Edwards-Helaire. At the time.
Yeah.
And we like Dobbins better than Edwards-Helaire at the time,
I would take Harris over Jacobs.
Yeah. Yes.
I would take.
Although Jacobs is another one that was a good receiver in Bama, and they never throw him the ball.
Yeah.
He has one target.
But he was always a part-time player at Bama
was. More than Harris.
Because Harris was there.
Yeah,
Harris
was
stealing carries from him as a freshman.
Sure. And obviously they have five-star backs probably. So it's not. And
but even as we saw last year, though, they gave the ball to Harris.
Think about Harris, right.
They didn't do that with Jacobs.
Jacobs has been a part-time player for numerous different coaches.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's just what he is. How about this, though? He was a good receiver at Bama. He has one target in the NFL on third downs.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's never out there, and they don't use him when they do.
They use all these other, Washington and guys.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I would take Harris over him. But I liked him better then than I do now. I just don't think he's been used great.
Harris Melvin Gordon is a.
I'll take Harris over the Wisconsin version of Gordon.
But is it
Gurley
discussion?
Was the one that year? Gordon was the two. But Gordon had a really good career in college too. Like nobody was shocked when he was a first round pick.
No.
And from what I remember,
he went 15th.
I think they traded up for him too, a couple spots. From what I remember, that's just off the top of my head. So Harris is fifth on that list, something like that.
Yeah,
he's ahead of Fournette.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Fournette was overdrafted.
I probably would put him over McCaffrey.
Yeah, I wasn't
at the time.
I wasn't huge. I was looking at things through a Steelers lens.
Yeah. He wouldn't be.
And a 200-pound running back just didn't.
Mm-mm. I remember watching the combine when McCaffrey was there, and some of the announcers said they thought McCaffrey would have been the best slot receiver in that draft if he just lined up in the slot only.
Well, his rookie year, I mean, he only rushed for 435 yards.
Right.
But he
had
80 catches for 651 yards.
Rookie, right. So he's a little different.
Yeah.
I mean, his value is as a receiver more like a Kamara. But even at the time, I thought Harris was the better prospect just because I thought McCaffrey was more of a part-time player than he ended up being.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, he's a superstar now.
So, I mean, that's what you're getting here. If you look at just those players,
mm-hmm.
Barkley, the Barkley helped the Giants go from 3-13 to 5-11. Not a huge thing.
Right.
They went from 26th to 24th
in
rushing. He had 1,307 yards as compared to the 751 Orleans Darkwa had the previous year to lead them.
Wow, yeah.
But more importantly, if you look at what he did for their defense, they went from 31st in total yards allowed to 24th.
Wow, okay.
I mean, it makes a huge difference.
I'm glad you brought that
they
aspect of it up.
They played 38 fewer snaps that season.
That's half a game. It doesn't seem like much, but that's a couple per game.
Yeah.
I'll find it at some point. But just even that snaps per game stuff that I sent you, if you look at the league average versus the worst, I mean, there's some of them that are like 8 snaps a game more than they play.
That's huge.
They lead the league. Yeah. You know. So, but my point is, if the best team in the league is 8 snaps per game on offense more than defense, and the worst is minus 8, 2's huge. You know, I mean, those are the outliers. Those are the Jags and the Jets that are on the field forever. I mean, it was like the Packers this year was really good. So if you can average 2 fewer defensive plays a game or 3 fewer defensive plays a game, that is a massive ripple effect. And I think Harris can set you up to do that.
Yeah, I think he can as well.
The Steelers, I mean, frankly, Steelers' defensive depth is more worrisome to me than their starters, too, you know.
And again, that helps your defensive depth.
That's what I mean, right?
You know, you're not being forced to play those guys. You know, injuries are injuries, but, you know, if you don't have to play those depth guys quite as much because, you know, if it's a difference between playing an average of, let's say, 55 snaps per game as opposed to 52.
It's big.
Shoot,
those last couple ones matter a lot.
Yeah.
Snap 3 versus 4 might not matter. Snap 48 versus 49 is a lot harder. Yeah. I mean, there's not much left in the tank, you know what I mean? When was Lev's Bell's best year?
When's
the height of his powers? Like
16, 17, somewhere in there. I would say 16 was probably
I mean, I'd be curious just to see where the Steelers' defense was in snaps per game during his 3 best years. I don't know. We can't probably find that off the top of our heads. But, you know, if they were near the bottom, you could probably expect similar usage and results in that, you know, with Harris.
I would say his best year was probably 17. He led the league with 321 carries. He had 1,291 yards. He had better years. Like 2014, he had 1,361 on the ground.
Yeah.
But that was on 290 carries. He also had 85 catches in 17, although he had 83 in 2014. I mean,
so I wonder, like 14, 15, 16, 17, did the Steelers' defense end up in the bottom third in snaps per game?
I would guess that was probably the case.
Bet my bottom dollar it is.
Here's the other thing about it, Matt. The Steelers were, I think, 10th last year in time of possession. Mm-hmm. With no running game.
Everyone say with no running game.
No running game.
No clock. Right. All those incompletions and right. Absolutely. And for much of the year, they were top 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I mean, when things were going well, and obviously the offense got figured out and struggled at the end, but to finish 10th with the worst running game in the league, pretty good.
It's probably the only time it's ever happened.
Probably is.
I mean,
Would you take 10th again? 10th is pretty good.
10th is good, yeah.
10th is really good.
Again, your defense is not playing a lot of snaps.
And your defense helps that. There's a lot of three and outs,
they take the ball away
and sacks. And, you know, I mean, they're obviously helping that cause as much as the offense is. But
if they're 10th this year.
I think I would take that.
Yeah. And you know.
But no running game. That's a huge point. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, put it this way. At age 23, Le'Veon Bell, he was 23 in 2015. That's the same age that Najee Harris is now. That's why I look at him and I say, okay, I think he's going to be more of a finished product.
Harris.
Yeah, than Bell was as a rookie. Bell was a rookie at 20, he was 21 years old as a rookie.
I think he's more of a finished product than a lot of those first-round picks you mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Edwards-Helaire. I mean, he can't protect. We don't know if he's gotten any better. Penny can't even see the field. Fournette was very one-dimensional, and I think he was really young when he came out. That was one of the beauties of Zeke, actually, was very well-rounded as a receiver. Although I think Harris is a better receiver at the same point of their career. Exceptional in protection at Ohio State. Can run between the tackles, can run outside the tackles. I mean, like, he may not have been the best of those 10 in any one single category,
but he was at the top.
He's second or third in
all. Yeah, he's in the top 3 in all.
All, right.
And you look at what he did his rookie year, 1,631 yards.
With a rookie quarterback,
with a rookie quarterback.
Him and
they
Dak,
went,
right.
They went from 4-12 to 13-3.
Wow. Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. They went from being ninth in rushing to number two.
Yeah.
And they were coming – if Darren McFadden, the year before Ezekiel Elliott got there, rushed for 1,089 yards.
Yeah, he wasn't a bad player. And, I mean, and that line was –
they had a great line,
yeah. And, yeah, right. Frederick and Martin, and they invested in
obviously, the Steelers don't have that kind of line.
No, they don't. But they don't have a rookie quarterback either.
They don't have a rookie quarterback. 1,631.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's a lot of yards.
Sure. I mean, of course, anyone would take Zeke's rookie season for Harris, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, 85% of it would be
Pretty good.
Would be pretty good.
Right. I mean, that's actually that's the leading rushing yardage total for those rookies in that span that I looked at. Second was Barkley with 1,307.
Mm-hmm.
If Harris gets to 1,307,
oh, yeah.
That's a really good year.
You'll definitely take that.
Yeah.
One of the arguments against taking Zeke Elliott there, like they could have taken Bosa or Ramsey, from what I remember. One of them went with one over him and one went right behind him. It was a really good draft class. Is, okay, that was what, the 2013 draft, 14
15.
Draft? 15, okay. The logic is, well, wouldn't you rather have Ramsey or Bosa now than Zeke?
I don't know.
Probably.
Zeke Elliott is still only 25 years old.
I'd say he's still a puppy. If he looked, he didn't have a great year.
He didn't have a great year, but they were playing with bad quarterbacks. The line's not what it once was.
Right. And you're not married to the idea that you had to give the extended Zeke. I mean, if any mistake was made by the Cowboys, it was maybe they extended him a year too early and for too much money.
Yeah.
And because they could use a first-round pick this year or next year on his replacement. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
They jumped from 4-12 to 13-3.
I
don't know that you can argue that was a bad pick.
Exactly. And I really like Dak Prescott, and I think he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the league right now, and really has been underrated since his second season in the league.
That was actually 2016, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. But his rookie year, I thought he was very overrated. I mean, everyone thought he was the phenom.
Yeah.
He really benefited from
Zeke. Ezekiel Elliott rushing for 1,631 yards.
And where I'm going with this is maybe the Steelers have a Dak Prescott next year, you know, or I know Daniel Jones hasn't been wonderful, but Barkley being in place the year before he got there sure is nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You build that nest.
I mean, even like when Lev Bell was leaving here, I thought, man, that's bad business for anyone to get him. Unless it's, you know, I mentioned the Bills because Josh Allen was young or Sam Darnold was young. You know, like a team like that, go overspend a little bit on a back so your young quarterback. Like if I were Miami, I probably would have got somebody, you know, for Tua this year.
Yeah.
You know, and they supposedly really liked Harris. I mean, that would have been something that would have made sense for them. My point is if you're on either side of the back argument, a really young, talented franchise quarterback is sure happy he's there.
Absolutely.
That's undeniable.
It just loosens everything up.
Especially if they could catch the ball, too.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at it, what helped Drew Brees at the end of his career?
Kamara was more important in that offense than Brees these last 2 years or so.
Kamara was more important in that offense than Michael Thomas.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure if you asked Peyton, who would you not want to lose on game day? I think he'd say Kamara.
Well, they showed us that. They paid him.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
They gave him big money to stay.
And they won games without Brees.
Yeah,
and
because they had
Thomas
that great running back.
Thomas himself last year. Even Fournette, I mean, he made Bortles okay.
Right, yeah. He made him an NFL-caliber quarterback.
Right. I mean, Bortles wasn't terrible that year when Fournette was at his best. I mean, he hit him. I'm not going to say he made him okay.
Yeah.
He hid him, you know, and it wouldn't shock me.
Because you had to respect the running game.
You had
with
to
that team. You had
game.
To.
Right, right.
Because I mean, if you didn't, he's going to rip you apart. He's going to get, you know, 6 carries or 6 yards at a time,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to bleed you to death.
I mean, look what the Giants are doing. Like, this is Daniel Jones' last crack probably, or close to it. But we just got your first-round receiver that can, you know, run reverses and stuff. Barkley's coming back. You know, you make life easier for these young guys so they can actually improve.
Yeah, I agree. But that is going to do it.
Good numbers, though.
It's going to do it for this show. So for my partner, Matt Williamson, for Jacob Recht here on site, keeping us on the air, I'm Dale Lally. We thank you for listening to this edition of The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio.